Now, In Depth with Francis Rose.
Thanks for listening on Friday, October 9th, 2015. It's 5 minutes after the hour on Federal News Radio, the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week. This week, the experts selecting the three most important federal news stories of the week. Janet Copenhaver, the Washington representative of federally employed women. Welcome to the countdown for the very first time, Janet.
No, Francis, I'm getting kind of nervous now.
Oh, don't be nervous. This is easy and it's fun and we have a good time. And you're on with a pro today. It's John Palguta, the Partnership for Public Service. And I have to just kiss up to you for a second. You and your colleagues just did an unbelievably tremendous job, as always, with the Service to America Medal Awards on Wednesday evening. So congratulations for that.
Well, Francis, thank you very much. But it was the feds that we were recognizing that did the heavy lifting. We were just saying, hey, look at these great folks.
Later on in the program, I'm going to give you your requisite opportunity to talk about how people can start. And you've already started for 2016.
We have indeed.
And how folks can nominate people that they work with or work around for the 2016 edition of the Service to America Medals. But we'll start now where we always do with...
Number three!
And Janet, your choice number three is about the Sammies. It's from the Washington Post, Joe Davidson's column. Titled "Sammies Bring Good News to Feds Hit with So Much Bad News." It's a pleasure to see you at the ceremony Wednesday night. What was your top takeaway? What did you like the best about this one this year?
The dinner. I'm going to echo what Francis just said. No, not the dinner. No.
I was going to say
salmon.
Salmon was terrific, but I mean this.
I want to echo what Francis just said. It's a wonderful event. I've gone for several years now going straight, and it's just great. And I have to say I'm humbled every year when I hear the stories of these heroes and heroines in the federal service and what they're doing to help Americans each and every day. And I truly, truly get tears in my eyes every time I hear their stories. So, again, kudos to a great event and looking forward to many more.
I'm going to get myself in trouble, I think, but I have a favorite. I had Dr. Rosenberg on the program yesterday,
yes,
the
fantastic.
Federal Employee of the Year, and his work's just amazing. I mean, this guy's been, all he does is cure cancer. I mean, that's it.
Save thousands and thousands of lives.
At the National Institutes of Health. Here's why my favorite, though, is my favorite. The Management Excellence Medal this year went to Ed Hugler from the Labor Department. And Ed fixed the Labor Department's financial management system when the vendor that was servicing it went belly up. The reason that Ed is my favorite is because everybody else that's done stuff here, there's somewhat of a profile to what they're doing outside the federal government. What Ed did, there's probably not a citizen walking down the street that if you said, hey, this guy fixed the financial management system at the Labor Department, that anybody would go, wow, that's a big deal. I think every one of the others, if you said, here, this is what this person did, most people would say, hey, that's pretty important. That's I get the reason why that's a big deal. I'm not sure that's the case for Ed. He doesn't care. Because that's not what he's in the business for. He's in the business for doing what's necessary to empower the Labor Department to serve the American people, and that's why he's my favorite.
Well, that is a really interesting observation, Francis, in part because we did not have a management excellence category when we started the SAMMEs 13 years ago. We had the science and the, Homeland Security and all that kind of stuff. And you're right, those are wonderful, wonderful things that people do in those categories and easily understood. But a couple of years, 3-4 years ago, some folks in government said, we have some really hardworking people making a huge impact because they're managing so well, and we want to nominate these people. We don't have a real place to put them, so we created that was our latest category. We created a management excellence category because what so many people like Ed Hugler, who's just fixing financial systems and stuff in this crazy government financial world, it makes a huge impact on effective government. So, and I'm so pleased that we did that because we can recognize folks like Ed for doing wonderful work that makes a huge difference, and most people would not even have a clue.
I want to be very clear that I do not mean at all to diminish the achievements of the other medal recipients.
Oh, that's clear.
By citing Ed's work. But, the gentleman from EPA, Jacob Moss, who's working on the Cook Stove Initiative around the world. I mean, that's tremendous. It's making people's lives better.
Throughout the world.
All over the world. And by doing so, promoting the United States as a good actor in the world when not everybody has that opinion. The stories are terrific, and you can read about them on federalnewsradio.com. And meet all of the finalists, not just the winners. Mm-hmm. But I have a soft spot in my heart for Ed because of what he did. Janet Copenhaver's choice is the third most important federal news story of the week from the Washington Post. Sammies bring good news to feds hit with so much bad news. And we'll talk more about that later on in the program, the importance of all of this. John, your choice at number three is my colleague Meredith Summers' story on federalnewsradio.com. Sequestration effects would reach far beyond Capitol Hill. I take a little bit of comfort, maybe just a teeny bit, in the fact that there does seem to be a lot of talk on the Hill right now about doing a two-year budget deal mm-hmm. that would get Congress beyond the 2016 elections to not have to worry, at least about the top line pieces of this. And I haven't heard any discussion of anything that would set those numbers at sequester level. So I'm glad that Meredith is pointing out how this would impact agencies. I'm really hopeful that it doesn't ever happen.
Well, we're all hopeful, but the reason this became, you know, my opening story is that because it's still a possibility, mm-hmm. we, you know, sequester did go into effect initially, and people may not remember, but sequestration in this form was designed to be so stupid that Congress and the administration would mm-hmm. agree to a budget deal to avoid these arbitrary, you know, cross-the-board budget cuts, mm-hmm. which are insane because there's no rhyme or reason behind them. And but, of course, they didn't reach a budget deal. Sequestration went into effect. And, you know, we had some really, you know, bad consequences in terms of government operations. So, you know, although people breathed a sigh of relief when we got past the shutdown at the end of the year, you know, we've got a triple threat still. Mm-hmm. We have, a continuing resolution until December 11. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we're going to come up to a possible shutdown scenario mm-hmm. again. We have the budget caps that have to be raised, the deficit ceiling, the debt ceiling. And that's coming up soon. Mm-hmm. And then there's still this thing of sequestration that could happen if they don't reach a deal. And, you know, the headlines today around Majority Leader McCarthy saying, no, I don't want to be the Speaker of the House, mm-hmm. You know, shows a sign of maybe some sanity there. but then, you know, who's going to lead to get past this triple threat? It's an unknown right now.
So there's something that I think your Hill experience can help us understand, Janet, and that is it strikes me the sequestration issue is actually two separate issues that I don't know if we do such a good job, my colleagues in the media and I, of separating. One of them is the dollar amount of the caps, mm-hmm. and the other is the mechanism of sequestration that and how that how those dollar amounts are forced into effect. And what I keep hearing is I see those combined all the time, mm-hmm. where that's not necessarily the case. We could very well wind up with a budget deal that eliminates sequester, that eliminates the across-the-board cuts, but still has the dollar amount set at the levels that the Budget Control Act calls for. Am I saying all that correctly?
Well, it's funny when you said sanity. You know, only in Washington would a deal that everyone hated and thought would never go into place and would never work is actually in place. So, you know, no one supports this sequestration. They say it. So we all want it to go away. To answer your question, Francis, I assume that they can say, sure, we're going to get rid of sequestration, but those caps can still remain. I mean, they can mm-hmm. approve whatever caps they want to approve.
Right.
It's the across-the-board crazy cuts that I know few when we were going through it every week we sent a missive out about the services that were being disruptive, and there were a lot of them. So it's just a crazy situation, and I would remain optimistic like you, but what's been going on the Hill is just, and I've been watching this stuff for decades, as both of you have, This blows my mind, what's going on up there.
John Palguta's choice for the third most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. It's Meredith Summers' story, Sequestration Effects Would Reach Far Beyond Capitol Hill. And that story and all the stories on this week's countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the second most important federal news stories of the week is selected by Janet Copenhaver and John Palguta on the Federal News Countdown. Back on In Depth with Francis Rose, the Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected this week by Janet Copenhaver of Federally Employed Women and John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service. And we're up to
number two.
And the second most important federal news story of the week, as each of you have chosen, is just different takes on the 2015 Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey. Janet, you chose the GovExec story headlined "The Five Agencies Where Morale is Dropping the Most." And John, you chose Emily Kopp's story on federalnewsradio.com, the good and bad news revealed by Federal Employee Survey. The overall trend is okay, I guess. 1% up on the most important measures. But John, you could argue, really, that 1% is, you know, I can't even get the phrase out. Statistically insignificant. Couldn't one argue that?
Well,
I mean, it's good. It's going up 1% is better than going up zero or going down.
Yeah. So here's the thing on that. And, you know, the devil's in the details. And Janet's story gets into some of those details. But actually, statistically significant, since I used to work with a bunch of statisticians, is a mathematical computation. Okay. And 1% statistically significant. But is it statistically meaningful, which is where you're going on?
That's what I'm getting at. Yeah, okay.
And,
good point.
And I would say in this context, it is meaningful in the sense that since 2010, there had been a steep decline in employee satisfaction, engagement, commitment, and particularly when compared to the private sector, which has actually, you know, stayed pretty even. Mm-hmm. And so I was actually quite interested to see the results, which we now have from OPM, mm-hmm. and we'll be using this data to update our best places rankings in another month or so. But the fact that 2015 could have been more bad news, where we continue to decline, which would be horrible, or we could have bottomed out and actually even started creeping up, and that's what we did. So, you know, Emily Kopp, talked about good and bad news. I think good news is we have apparently bottomed out government-wide, and we've seen that slight increase of 1%. And the sample is so huge. There's so many employees. Mm-hmm. That's why statistically significant, you know, numbers-wise, mm-hmm. when you move that many people, even one percentage point or one point, it's significant. So that was good news.
I was struck by the leadership numbers, and we'll talk about those in a minute. Janet, your story points out five large agencies. This is a GovExec story. Those with more than 800 employees that have seen the biggest drop-offs in satisfaction since 2010. DHS, 15%, Treasury, 12%, EPA, 11%, the Court Services and Offender Supervision Agency, a 10% drop. I didn't even know that existed until
the
Feds this year.
Right.
Okay, great. He played for the Cubs, I think.
No, that's Sammy.
Oh, Sammy Sosa. Okay. Federal Communications Commission, a 10% drop. What's the significance of these agencies? I mean, this signals a trend, I would think. 5 years running, if this is the way that they're headed, this mm-hmm. is definitely something they should be paying attention to, shouldn't they?
And first, I want to address what John was saying, you know, the overall 1%. Considering that they were faced with furloughs, sequestration, and a government shutdown, if we went lower, I mean, you had to have gone up. And even a 1% to me from that abyss of those three things is saying a lot about mm-hmm. the morale in the government. Now, I chose this story, and I have to say, I just was floored with the fact that Homeland Security, which is so critical to our nation's security, to our security as we fly, as we do everything, just the whole terrorist stuff, that has gone down by 15%, and I believe it's even lower than 50% now. So more than half the employees at Homeland Security have really bad morale. And I think that's just really kind of scary that it just is not coming up. And I know that the new administrator is trying, but to me, that's a really scary trend. I mean, I know the others are there too, but Homeland Security just struck me as something to be concerned about.
Secretary Johnson announced this week that he is going to, they've created a job and will fill in the coming weeks this position of a chief engagement officer, I think is the title of the position.
Yeah, in fact, I was just going to comment that if we're looking for silver linings, which I tend to do, the one thing is that at Homeland Security, there were two ways they could go. They could become defensive and say, look, there's a lot of stuff happening out there. It's outside our control, and it is what it is. But they've not been defensive. They've embraced this, saying, yes, this is not where we want it to be. Mm-hmm. It concerns us, and we're going to do stuff about it, including somebody whose job it is to focus on this. And to engage folks within the agency around what can we do to make this better. Because I agree fully, Janet. At Homeland Security, you don't want people who are
like
disaffected,
right?
Exactly. And don't care about what they're doing.
I don't want them screening my bags at the airport.
Exactly. Yeah. And if I could just add one other thing, Francis, I kind of linked my two and three because the Sammies, you're looking at this bad morale and you're looking at all this other stuff, and that's why it's so important to honor those federal workers every year on those who are really making a difference, and actually the federal workforce overall. What I took out of the viewpoint, the survey, is, despite everything else that's going on, they really do like their jobs, and they really do like coming to work to help the American people each and every day. And that's what we have been really stressing, is the critical services that are provided that we take for granted. I mean, we don't think about it every day.
A friend of mine in the media, in the general news media, saw this story and asked me this week, is this a crisis for Jay Johnson, the Homeland Security Secretary? And I said, well, I don't know if that's the right word, but if that is the right word, then it's not just a crisis for him. It was a crisis for Janet Napolitano, and it was a crisis for the DHS secretaries under President Bush, because this has been this way for a long time. So it's unfair to say that this is Jay Johnson's problem, implying that somehow this has just happened under his watch.
Right.
I mean, and Janet, that's one of the reasons I think your choice is valuable here, because it points out this has been an ongoing drop in satisfaction with working at DHS since 2010. And it would be interesting, I think, to go back and look at previous surveys in whatever form and see how DHS has done since it was glommed together.
Yeah, so 2 points on that is, first of all, a good survey, and this is a very valid survey, it's huge, it doesn't give you the answers. It tells you the questions to ask.
Right.
And one of the questions there, therefore, to ask is, well, why is it, why is the trend the way it is, and what's happening within the department? Because we have parts of Homeland Security, like Coast Guard, which is actually doing quite well. True. So what is it about Coast Guard and the Coast Guard culture, and how do we import that perhaps in some way to other parts? So when you start deconstructing the results and you look, it's like, well, it's not the whole agency is going south. It's there are parts that are struggling. And then you start focusing on those parts, and you start looking at even at the different levels of employees. Why are some employees more engaged than at a higher grade level than lower level employees, and that kind of thing? And you start developing then a game plan for, okay, there are things we can deal with. We can't control Congress from within DHS. They would love to, but they can't. But there are things that they can control. So when I talk to groups of federal managers, I said, look, yeah, you got a tough job, one of the toughest jobs in government. There's things you can't control, but there's a lot that you can control, because the most important factor, the most important thing that dictates a person's level of a satisfaction commitment is what they think of their supervisor, what they think of their bosses.
Right.
One question that I think we should start to ask, and I don't know that I've seen it asked very often, and I understand it's probably a politically incorrect question to ask in a government environment, but for some of these jobs and some of these agencies potentially, I think it's fair to ask, what is the ceiling on satisfaction? I mean, you think about some of the jobs at some, and it's not just DHS, some of the jobs that people have to do in some of these agencies, they're not the greatest jobs in the world. And we're fortunate that there are as many people who are as willing to do them as are. I can't imagine how much it must stink to stand there and deal with the grumpy passengers that are trying to get on the airplanes. So the fact that people will show up for that job at all, because I would never do that job. There's a I'm just being honest. There's a million other jobs that if I really needed the work, I would do something else, and I'd drive Uber or something before I would do that. So the fact that there has to be a ceiling of varying heights on the satisfaction levels that we can ever expect on some of these jobs. And that's analysis that I don't know if anybody's undertaken.
You know, I have talked to folks who spend their life doing this stuff, the pollsters and the survey people and all that. And I've said, well, there's got to be a point. And they said, you know, really, there's not. And you know, the folks who drive the garbage trucks or the baggage screeners, what have you, it's a tough job. But you find people in those jobs that think it's great. I go through the airport lines like everybody else, and some of them are smiling, and they're pleasant, and it's like they're pleased to be there. So the key is, how do we find people who have the disposition that, you know, they want to be out there in the open air on the back of the garbage truck because they get to see the world, and they're fine with it. So how do we find people who are well matched to the job, and then how do we find managers and supervisors who can elicit the best? I don't know that you ever get to 100%.
Sure,
we see organizations where you have, you know, 85% of folks saying this is a great place. I would recommend it. I'm happy and satisfied and I'm engaged. So yeah, I don't know. Some jobs there's the bar is higher. It's a tougher lift, without a doubt. You're absolutely right, Francis. But I think you don't give up.
And it should be over at least 50%.
Yeah, and I'm not.
It should be over 50%. Absolutely right, Janet.
And I'm not suggesting you should ever give up, or that you should assume. And I understand that's why people don't, even if they've thought of the question, they hesitate to ask it because they don't want to imply, oh, we're only ever going to get to this, and that's as good as it can possibly be. I understand that, but it just strikes me that it, at some point, should be in the mix.
And we have seen agencies go up and down dramatically over time, so. Yeah, so it makes you wonder.
The second most important federal news story of the week, selected by John Palguda and by Janet Copenhaver, both revolve around the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey for 2015. John's story is Emily Kopp's story on federalnewsradio.com. Janet Copenhaver's story is from GovExec, and they're both linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, the most important federal news stories of the week on the Federal News Countdown. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by Janet Copenhaver and by John Palguda, and we are up to
number one.
And John, your choice is the most important federal news story of the week, coincides with Janet's choice at number three. It's the Joe Davidson column from the Washington Post. Sammies bring good news to feds hit with so much bad news. Now, let's be honest. You're a little biased.
I am.
And that's okay.
I make no pretensions about that.
That's why I appreciate your honesty and candor. But I'll say again, you and your colleagues did just a wonderful job. And Max's comments, Max Steyer, the president CEO of the Partnership Public Service, made very terrific observations at the beginning of the event on Wednesday night about the importance of recognizing excellence in government service. What personally, not professionally, not as a member of the partnership, but as somebody who's been around the government for a long time, when you left the Mellon Auditorium on Wednesday night, which I imagine was a lot later than most people.
We were cleaning up.
And thank you for that. What were you thinking about on your way home? Were you thinking about something that stuck out at you that evening, or were you thinking about the board meeting Thursday morning to start to prepare for 2016?
Yeah, we had all the preparations for the board meeting, in the can. So I was thinking about really, and that's a good question. I spent 34 years in government. I've been at the partnership 14 years. You know, I think I deserve to be a little cynical if I want to be, but you can't be cynical when you lead the Sammies. Because it's, you know, you're seeing the people who are making a tremendous difference. And I'm really going home feeling pretty good because, and that's what, you know, the headline that Joe Davidson put on this, you know, it brings good news to feds hit with so much bad news. But I think it's a reaffirmation. I've spent my career in and around public service. And the recognizing these wonderful employees, and they're simply representative. It's not like, well, we just found a few.
Yeah.
There are legions of employees doing meaningful work, and they're really dedicated, as our award winners are. And it's a reaffirmation. I feel good about the fact that, you know, I have two daughters, and I want them to inherit a world that, you know, has some semblance of order and a future. And a good government is important to that end. Mm-hmm. You know, the country needs an effective government, and these people are providing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and hopefully they're going to inspire. And we had a young person, because we have a category where it's, you know, age 35 and below, yes, less than 5 years of service, who left a higher paying private sector job to come into government.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me feel good that, you know, we have people willing to do that, willing to put up with all the nonsense, you know, in terms of the denigration of service and the, you know, the budget battles and all that, and come in and do a job because they believe it. There were two award winners, you might recall, Francis, and you were looking very spiffy in your tux, by the way.
Thank you very much.
But there were two award winners.
All right.
There were two award winners who said, you know, my boss is here, and I'm going to tell you something I've never told you before.
Uh-huh.
You didn't have to pay me.
Right.
I would do this job just because I love it so much and it's that important. I talked to one of the bosses afterwards that keep paying them.
Yeah.
But
exactly.
But it's that level of dedication, mm-hmm. and you just feel so good about it.
I mentioned earlier in the program that my favorite of all the selections was Ed Hugler from the Labor Department, because what he does is not very high profile, right. and people in the general public don't know it. But I had a favorite moment, and it didn't involve Ed. And that favorite moment was when the ambassador from Liberia came to the stage and thanked Mia Beers and her team on the Ebola Disaster Assistance Response Team at USAID.
Yes.
A lot of powerful moments Wednesday night, but mm-hmm. I think that was the most powerful for me. Did you have a favorite moment or favorite person, Janet?
And I wanted to comment, too, that before on this award for the, can't call them millennials, but the under 35. I think
called a service medal.
Yeah, it's so critical, because that's what we keep hearing, is we're not getting those younger mm-hmm. folks in, and they have to be the next managers. And we're looking at a big boom in retirements coming up, and we're just not getting those young people. So I think that's a great category. I agree with you. When that ambassador got, again, I was just sitting there in awe of all these people.
Yeah, just amazing.
But John, I was going to ask you, if I can ask him a question.
Of course.
Who actually has to make these hard decisions? You must get like hundreds of nominations.
We do. We literally hundreds of nominations. So it's a two-step process. We use our staff to kind of screen through the hundreds, and they're doing fact checking and, you know, making sure that we got everything. And they narrow it down, which is a tough job in itself. But then we go to our blue ribbon panel. We couldn't do it in house, and we list them in the program.
Which you just happen to have.
Yeah, I do.
You're very well prepared.
And it's our. You know, the folks who, you know, members of Congress, union presidents, we had Catherine Archuleta, the former director of OPM. We had J. David Cox from AFGE. We had, Colleen Kelly from NTU. We had Ray LaHood, former secretary mm-hmm. of labor. Representative Mark Meadows from North Carolina was on the selection committee.
He was there that night, too.
Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. and he was there that night. So we have the president of the Ford Foundation. So we have folks who know good work when they see it. And they, you know, they look at all these finalists, and the finalists get recognized too, and they were all there last night.
Right.
But then they have to say, okay, somebody's got to be the face of public service in this category, and they have the award winners.
We got to wrap up this segment, but I do want to put in a plug for the 2016 nominations, which you already have a link at servicetoamericamedals.org.
Yes.
Where it's a big box right on the page there. You can't miss it to submit a nomination. I'm looking at the thing right now, and you make it really simple for people to submit.
Absolutely. We want people to be recognized, and we want nominations. Nominate somebody that you work with, or, you know, it could be your boss, it could be your employee. We've had contractors nominate folks that they work with in government. Mm-hmm. We've had family members. So nominate, recognize people. We send out a nice acknowledgement, even if you don't make the finalists. You know, they know that somebody has thought enough of them mm-hmm. to write a nomination. Please do that.
John Palguda's choice is the most important federal news story of the week from the Washington Post. Sammy's bring good news to feds hit with so much bad news. And you can find that and all of our stories on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Janet Copenhaver's choice at number one wraps up the federal news countdown next. In-depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio. This week's Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by John Palguda and Janet Copenhaver. And Janet, your choice at number one this week is from Federal Soup. The headline is Obama says no more short-term funding measures. Kudos to the president for saying that. Mm-hmm. He's saying the same thing that Senator McConnell is saying in the Senate. So we have the leader of the Senate. We have the leader of the executive branch. There is no leader in the House right now.
Right.
So we don't know what's going on there. But two out of three, I guess, ain't bad when it comes to figuring out what would happen next December 11th. I mean, I'm going to be like John here. I'm going to try to be hopeful about life in general. But I'm especially going to try to be hopeful about the idea that we'll see an omnibus come the middle of December rather than a bunch more CR stuff.
So now I get why I'm on the show. I'm with two optimists. Okay.
Oh, I didn't know you were a pessimist.
I chose this story, and it is also politics, and we know that. But I do think that there is a chance if the House does not get their act together, you do have a group of 40 folks who want to see the government shut down. And they could. They have that voting block who could.
I will disagree with you on that, but make your point.
Well, there he's the optimist there. So that's why I chose it as number one. I think it is a serious issue. We've got another fiscal cliff coming. We've got the debt ceiling November 5th. We have government running out of money December 11th. And we have sequestration from now on forever. And I think as the president said, it's a heck of a way. You can't run a country like this. You have to do long-term planning. We should not be running our country like this, punting every couple weeks with the threat of a shutdown.
I agree exactly with the president and with you on that sentiment, Janet, that this is a terrible way to run this. My takeaway from the comments that I've seen from that group, the House Freedom Caucus, is that they are willing to use a government shutdown as a tool to get what they want. I'm not sure that all of them or even a majority of them believe that a government shutdown is a good thing or that that's what they want. My sense is more that it doesn't bother them enough for them to forbid thinking about a government shutdown at the expense of, in this case, it was Planned Parenthood. So it's a very fine distinction.
The verb, want is probably wrong, but it's like you said, they are willing to let it shut down to make their points, and their points are unrelated to a lot of this stuff.
You nailed it. What I think is really encouraging, John, is I've seen in the last month or so, especially, I've seen agencies being a lot more aggressive about going to the Hill and doing media, not just my program, but all over the place to say, listen, this is what a government shutdown really means. They didn't do that in 2013. I think that was a bad idea, and they're doing it now, and I think that's a really good idea.
Absolutely right. I think the memories of 2013. So in 2013, when we shut down, it had been like 17 years since the last major shutdown in the mid-90s.
And I think a lot of people didn't expect it.
That's right. Mm-hmm. They didn't expect it, and they didn't remember because it was like the locust. It had been 17 years. But now the memory of 2013 is fresh enough that people in government who do believe in what they do. They're in government to make a difference. They value their service. They're in the survey data. They believe it's important. So now they're saying, no, it's too important. We've got to speak out. They cannot lobby. Congress is very leery about that. But they can aggressively inform.
Mm-hmm.
And
educate.
Education, that's right.
Yes, and I think that's what they're doing. Some of them are saying, you know, look, just want to remind you, Mr. or Ms. Congressperson, that, you know, if we have a shutdown, this is going to happen. Just so you know.
Right.
And in the same vein, letting the public know so that they can talk to their representative. And I think that's important because we go into these things without understanding the implications and the impact. And then you have the uproar. It's a political loser because people afterwards say, well, that was a stupid thing to do. Why'd you do that?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you have a group of folks who don't care because their constituency is locked in, they're gerrymandered and they're safe, then I think that's, you know, that's problematic. So I think it's important that, you know, that people speak out, people within the agencies, just to remind folks, this is going to happen, this is the impact, and maybe there's a better way here.
There's one sticking point that I think would be useful to changing this dynamic to some degree in Congress. Your group has done a terrific job, Janet, Federally Employed Women, of providing information based on the best information that you can get about where federal employees live, what districts and states they live in. But that's not perfect because of the information that the government is either able or willing to provide. I don't know which it is. And what I would love to see is I would love to see some member of Congress ask the Government Accountability Office to do an audit and work with the four payroll systems to get that information available so that you and your colleagues that advocate for federal employees on the Hill can go to Congressman such and such and say, now we can document you have this many federal employees that live in your district and this many of them work at this agency and that agency and the other agency, because I know that some of your I don't think you and I have ever discussed this, but I know that some of your colleagues go to the Hill. People ask you that and you have to honestly say, this is the best data we have. And then they're able to pick it apart based on what you've got.
Yeah, we have data by county and many counties overlap other congressional districts. Mm-hmm. So I'm with you. We've been asking for this for many years now, and we hope we can get it.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by Janet Copenhaver. It's from Federal Soup. Obama says no more short-term funding measures. And that and all of our stories linked at federalnewsradio.com. John Palguda, terrific to see you, and congratulations again on a great event Wednesday night. Janet Copenhaver, thank you very much for a terrific first effort on the Federal News Countdown.
Thank you.
Come back and do this.
I love it. I will.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Federal
Francis.
News Countdown returns next week.